This podcast is supported by Red Energy. Powered by the mighty Snowy Hydro, a leader in renewable energy, Red is 100% Australian-owned and local. Phone 131 806.
I think I have become a lot more subtle and thoughtful because I probably didn't always think before I spoke in the past, although sometimes I still have foot-in-mouth disease. And, you know, I am used to myself. I'm very happy.
What I can't abide are politicians who receive a Queen's birthday honour just because they did their job of being a politician.
Well, immediately there was a bit of an Adam Goods backlash.
Interesting?
And it wasn't as bad as Adam Goods, but it was like, oh, who does he think he is? I mean, you know, get over yourself, Chad.
Corrie is grumpy. Yes, I am. Cara, Big Brother is back. I know how you love a reality television
show. Right back at your girlfriend.
God. Channel 7, it was bad 20 years ago when it was on Channel 10. It's bad now. It's bad.
And I love the fashion too. And I love the music. I really rocked a lace shirt. I really did.
Thank God you didn't say the pirate look. If you'd said that, I would have vomited.
Don't Shoot the Messenger podcast with Caroline Wilson and Corrie Perkin. Thanks to Red Energy, 100% Australian electricity and gas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Don't Shoot the Messenger. I am Corrie Perkin, and this is episode 131 of our little podcast. And I'm here with the birthday girl, my very dear friend, who doesn't mind admitting that she turned 60 on the weekend. In fact, told Channel 9 News, I understand, Caro, that you're 60. Happy birthday, Caro. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Corrie.
I never really understood
this situation about not talking about your age, particularly when you're sort of vaguely well-known and you're on Wikipedia and people have seen your contract. I'm loving being 60. I mean, obviously, you know, I hope that I get to 70, 80, 90. Well, maybe 100's a bit of a stretch. And it is a bit of a milestone that you do think a little bit more about than any other. But, yeah, no, I'm pretty happy. I'm counting my blessings, which I said I'd do for the month of June.
Well, I want to talk about your birthday a little bit later on because there's a lot of bonhomie goodwill in the air and lots of messages that I want to read out. But don't forget what Phyllis Diller said, Caro, one of my favourite Phyllis Diller quotes. You know you're old when somebody compliments you on your alligator shoes, but you're actually in bare feet.
Well, I'm neither in bare feet nor in alligator shoes, but I am sitting here.
But you've had a pedicure.
I have. I've had a pedicure. I've had a manicure. I've had a leg wax. Oh, that was one of the happiest mornings of my life, I tell you.
So that's a nice segue into some of our housekeeping and our correspondence from our lovely messengers out there. Hello, everyone. This is the message I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago. I actually found it and this arrived on my telephone a couple of weeks ago. My name is Anna and I am a huge fan of Don't Shoot the Messenger. We are on a road trip and I had my husband listen to the podcast. As a result, he feels he knows you intimately. He was a little concerned about the length of hair on Cara's legs, the dangers of self-pedicure and overcooking on the HRH's scones. Other than that, as a result of listening to Don't Shoot, he feels more in touch with his feminine side. Can't wait for the next installment on Caro's legs and Corrie's toes. He is now a dedicated potty and we will be in touch with Red Energy. A week later, Caro, Anna text again. On return road trip, Anna wrote, addicted to program. Husband happy to collect your cars and fill with petrol. However, he says you're on your own with the sex toys. Pun intended.
You did cause a bit of eyebrow raising with the old sex toys. I didn't sort of, you know, people said, was she just waiting for the excuse to talk about
sex
toys?
Gosh, no. It was a legitimate story. No, the figures of sales went up quadruple.
I get it. Actually, our dear friend Gabby Trainer, who remembers, is so good at remembering birthdays, wanted to say that your Queen's scones were absolutely beautiful. She made them over the weekend.
Oh, good on it. Well, yeah. I can't take credit for it. Buckingham Palace chefs can, but that's good. No, I'm glad they worked out. There was an Instagram message from App Magent. Corrie, I think you found the name of your nemesis for your children's book, Randy Fox, which was the name of the sex toy company. Remember?
I ran into our friend Heck the other day, and he's a big podcast fan, and he said, Brendan the Bandicoot. And he said, you've got to name them all after your friends. That's the way you sort of start. I don't think Brendan's really an evil name, though, is it?
I don't think Brendan's an evil name.
Bandicoots are a good
Brendan
evil.
Brendan is more like the Irish, you know, I don't know, some benevolent, sort of scruffy animal propping up the local pub, I think.
Oh, no, I thought you're benevolent sort of nice neighbour. But bandicoots are quite evil. Didn't we discuss bandicoots?
Yes, bandicoots was what we came up with, to kind of appease the local flora and fauna. But, Caro, there was a bit of correspondence to me personally and also on the Instagram account confirming that Freddie was indeed the flute in HR Puff and Stuff. And did you know this? I don't know how I went down this web the other day when I was investigating HR Puff and Stuff. Did you know that the title song, HR Puff and Stuff, it was actually Paul Simon successfully sued the Croft brothers, who were the producers, claiming that the theme to HR Puff and Stuff too closely mimicked his song, the 59th Street Bridge song, feeling groovy.
Yeah.
So
really?
He was successful.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yep. They paid him a bag of booty, and then he had his name credited as one of the song's co-writers. So if we watch an old episode of HR Puff and Stuff, you'll see Paul Simon's name. Just a little bit
That's
of trivia
a great
there.
Bit of trivia. Can I just mention the other Anna and the petrol situation? She totally agrees with my self-serve petrol gripe. She never puts petrol in her car. Her husband or daughter always does it. She hates the fumes. She says that in Canada you can go to a separate bowser and pay an extra $5 for the service. And she gladly did that.
Oh.
That's Anna Christopher.
We have a lot of Annas who listen and a lot of Janes. It's really interesting. Jane Lowe, thank you for your lovely email. I won't read it out, but we appreciated it. And also from Kim Salt, who's a bit of a buddy of mine, married to Bernard Salt, the demographer, although, of course, she has her own identity and I understand that, but she wanted to tell us an amusing story. She and Bernard were in the car travelling to the country, to Terang, where the elderly mothers live, for the first time since lockdown. And she's a mad potty, Caro. She loves Don't Shoot the Messenger. And she suggested to Bernard that they listen. And, of course, it was the day when you and I were talking about him last week about suburban life in suburban Australia. So she said thanks for getting her through a difficult time. She's had a She's had an unfortunate few months with breast cancer and all of the anxiety and side effects that that causes. So she was very grateful that she could listen to us and also pick up on our tips, like, for example, the India Hicks podcast where she interviews her mother, Pamela Hicks, which is a real, winner. And she just says, Caro, I wish you the happiest of birthdays and feel for you not to be able to celebrate as you would wish. And they had to postpone their son's wedding in Copenhagen. So I feel your pain. Thanks, Kim. It's lovely to hear from you and lovely to hear that you're on the road to recovery.
Kim was in our thoughts at a book club weekend we had a few years ago in Terang, because I think that is...
It's where Bernard comes from.
Yes. And I think...
And obviously Kim, I guess.
Yes, I think they both come from Terang. And which brings me to, if you listen to our GLT episode later on, we're going to talk about our favourite Victorian destinations, because let's face it, Corrie, we're not going to be going much further. Or we might throw in a few from New South Wales as well.
We might be going to New Zealand, Caro, thanks to Jacinda.
Yes, but probably not this month. Probably not.
Not this month. Now, challenges, Caro. June challenge. How are you going?
Starting as I mean to go on. Well, the walking's great. The sort of living a much, cleaner sort of relaxed life is probably not going so well this week, because it's been a massive weekend. I basically said on Monday night's Footy Classified to Craig off air before we did the show at our production meeting, you've got to carry me tonight. I am just absolutely exhausted. I couldn't say the word ominous, and it was on air, and I tried to say it. It went out of my head completely. I thought, oh dear, is this like the beginning of the end? I couldn't think of the word ominous.
I think it's
ominous.
Probably just one too many Negronis over the weekend.
Oh, it was a big weekend. Anyway, so, but yeah, I'm just having a lovely sort of quieter time. And I'm not going to rush around and go out to 1,000 dinners and plan 1,000 things.
But the fitness is going well?
The fitness is going well. I don't really know what else to say. I mean, I've just found out that we can go to AFL grounds in Victoria anyway. I mean, there's going to be fans slowly coming back into grounds elsewhere in Queensland, et cetera, starting even this weekend, I'm told. But so I'll be going to the MCG on Thursday night to do pregame for 3AW.
That's the best birthday pressing you could get.
I know. And going into studios and stuff. But when we're at actual games, we'll be there. And next Thursday night, Corrie, the clash of the Hawks and the Tigers. I'll be there as well. So I feel so blessed and so lucky, but I'm thinking I might even walk to the G in the winter cold. Mm. Walking home could be a bit of a challenge
dark. You'll have to get some, you'll have to get an Uber or someone to give you a lift. But I think walking to the G is great. I often walk to our friend Joe's house in Richmond.
It's a lovely walk, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've often walked home from Saturday radio when I haven't hung around for the whole game, which, let's face it, I often don't. But so that's something I'm going to do. But I'm so glad I can actually go to the football, because a week ago we were told we'd probably be doing it all from studios and the callers would be doing it watching screens. Well, now they can actually go to the games.
How about $50 you sneak me in next week as your penciler?
It's actually really hard. They check the boot of your car. You get a special wristband. You've got a thing
in your
car. They
check the boot of your car?
Well, they do that anyway, actually, for security.
Oh, do they? But there I am hiding.
Yeah, no.
In my Hawthorn scarf.
No, but you've got to fill in a form. And, it's like going to a restaurant now and you've got to do your phone app. It's all very complicated. Not much spontaneous about COVID, Corrie.
Okay, so your challenge.
What about your challenge?
Well, look, I haven't written a word, but I have nailed the book deal.
What, are you publishing it?
You just jumped on your coffee.
Are you publishing it?
Oh, thank you. No.
Well, you've got a little imprint.
Somebody who I can't mention because they have to actually speak to their associate at the publishing company heard our podcast last week and in all seriousness sent me a message saying, sounds great. What do you think? Should we pitch it? I've just gone here. Just let me run.
Well, you don't quite have a book deal. You've got a suggestion of a book deal. That is the absolute impetus.
What's wrong
impetus,
with exaggerating,
Corrie,
and becoming overexcited?
That's the absolute impetus for you to start writing the flipping thing. please. They didn't sort of give Tolstoy, $1 million when War and Peace was just an idea. Anyway, good luck.
Okay, I'll get cracking. Now, I wouldn't say Mr. Kitten Goes to Town is in the same. Thank you for the analogy with Leo Tolstoy.
Well, know what I mean. Was it The Horse Whisperer? He wrote one chapter. Nicholas, what's his name?
Oh, Sparks.
Yes, that's it. Well done. And it was such an unbelievable first chapter. They gave him a massive advance and it sort of went.
It was all downhill after
that. Well, it sort of started really well and started to go downhill in the second half. It still became a movie with Robert Redford and was very good. But
the thing is, in my head, I know exactly what Mr. Kitten is doing when he goes to town. I know the impetus for the trip to town. I don't know what he does when he gets there.
There's clearly a bit more work to do.
Caro, turning 60, I want to talk to you about this. But first of all, I do want to say just a couple of words. And I didn't know how to do this. This is actually very late last night, so excuse me if it doesn't make sense. But I was thinking about your birthday and there were a few words I would have loved to have said on the weekend. But I'd actually rather say them today because the potties, I think, they love you because they listen to us. I mean, if you drove them nuts, they wouldn't be listening to you. But also for any of us who are facing significant birthdays and have friends in our lives and we want to say happy birthday, maybe this is a bit of a catalyst. So I thought I would just make my own little BSF, which as everybody knows is our segment book, screen and film, food. But today I'm going B, here are some words that when I think of you, and I think they start with B, I think of brainy. Now, you are, as Anna from the op shop said the other day, you have an elephantine memory. You remember things, I don't just mean the trivial things like what we wore to the 21st, but you remember the names of stuff. How often have I been caught short here, scrambling through my iPhone trying to find the facts and figures? Or Jane and I are like, is she right? We don't know. Of course you're right. You remember the actor. You remember the year it happened. You remember the line. You remember the footy game. You remember the incident. You are amazing how you do that.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And your mother also has an incredible brain, so it must be an hereditary thing.
I think she's her wealth of knowledge in certain areas is quite staggering. There's certain films you can only see with mum because she understands every nuance and every tribute. But, I couldn't remember the word ominous the other night, and you remembered Nicholas Sparks, so you're not bad yourself, Corrie.
You're also bright. You're bright to be around, and we love that, and you are brilliant. And you're busy. You're one of the busiest people I know. Your diary is constantly full. I'm lucky I actually just get to see you once a week at this little podcast.
Oh, I've actually picked up the diary again. I've started filling it in.
It's frightening.
Yeah, I know. There was just 2 months when we didn't look at our diaries.
No, well, tell me about the $54 diary at home, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. You are also a little bit bossy,
yep,
which I think
enough.
You'd acknowledge. You are a bridge queen and boring never. So I took that word out. And you are beloved. All of your friends love you and all of your I think there are lots of people in the football world would say that they care about you hugely. Apart from respect, they love your company. S, now, stimulating, you're sociable, you're a storyteller. And I put in the word service because for many years you have offered great service to your readers and your listeners and your viewers. Really going above and beyond what a normal journo would to provide, you know, shining the light in dark corners and all the things that good journalists do. And in that regard, you are a great journalist. You are also smooth. And when you're trying to get a story, you are somewhat seductive. Do you remember that time you took me years ago interview in North Melbourne with some dodgy and you said, you talk to the friend, I've got to get the story out of the player manager. Do you remember? And you sat there as he plied you with cocktails.
I had to talk
to the boring.
I left you with a player manager.
You had the player.
Who wanted to sit in on the interview, remember? He wanted to sit in on the conversation.
And you said I had to be a foil while you seduced that. Anyway,
I
saw it
firsthand. Seduce was a word, Corrie. I mean, I was trying to get an interview.
Seductive. Well, you seduced a story out of it.
Well, sometimes I think it's a bit sexist when some of the blokes say that because, I mean, you know, male journos.
I'm a female, I can say that.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Scandal, you love one. And S for shopping. Never seen anybody whiz through cream Cornwall as fast as you. F, fascinated, because you're fascinated in everything that people tell you and you are fascinating yourself. And film is another one that starts with F because you love films and you love footy. There's no denying that. Faithful. You are incredibly faithful to your old friends and you are fearless in your drive for not just stories and from a journalistic front but also fearless in the many causes that you believe in. And F is for family oriented. You are a wonderful wife, a wonderful mother and you know, such a fantastic daughter to your two parents, who are not aging, might I add. They were there having lots of champagne the other day too, I noticed, across a crowded balcony.
Yeah, they were.
Fun.
Well, it was just, obviously I wasn't overseas, which would have been nice. There wasn't a party because you're not allowed to. So just to have a few drinks with whoever was around, a few locals, was so lovely. But it's pretty amazing.
To have your parents there.
It was great. You're so lucky.
And if you'd been overseas, you wouldn't have had that opportunity. And then F finally is for friend because you're a terrific one. And I love you lots. And I'm so honoured to call you my friend for more than 40 years.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. It's amazing. We're still here with our alligator feet.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Actually, my feet aren't so bad, Corrie, can I just say, particularly after the pedicure, and they don't look like alligators.
I'm so glad about the pedicure. So, Caro, tell me about turning 50. Martin Scorsese once said...
Well, 60, actually.
Oh, sorry, 60. What did I say?
50.
Oh, that's
handy. Thank you.
Wait another 10 minutes, I'll make it 40.
My bridge partner, Mary, might be turning in her, if she's listening to this, when you say I'm a bridge queen, I'm surprised she hasn't sacked me. Our online bridge career hasn't quite been the career we had hoped.
I'll wait till you're back in the room or on the table.
She played with someone else the other day and they did really well, so I was a little bit nervous.
Caro, Martin Scorsese, the famous Hollywood director, said once on the eve of his 60th birthday, I'm going to be 60 and I'm almost used to myself. Are you used to yourself?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
In fact, I think you were born used to yourself,
I'm
have a great sense of self.
Yeah, I think, that's different to being used to yourself. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know exactly what he means. And when you're used to yourself, I think you become more used to the people around you and you value things differently. You do value things like loyalty and hard work and intelligence. I think the older I get, I think you'd almost, I think being around people who don't sort of think things through can often be more frustrating than people who can do the occasionally mean thing, if you know what I mean. And intelligence is not something that necessarily means you're academically intelligent either. I don't know why I just sort of went off on that
emotional
tangent,
emotional intelligence, I think, is one of one of the great gifts that can be bestowed upon a person.
Yes. I think I have become a lot more subtle and thoughtful because I probably didn't always think before I spoke in the past, although sometimes I still have foot-in-mouth disease. And, you know, I am used to myself. I'm very happy. I mean, I think if you turn a certain age and think life's been good to you, there's no reason to worry about getting old. I mean, it's just so inevitable. It's such a waste of time, really. And so, yeah, I am, I guess.
That's good. Is there a favourite decade in your life?
Oh, look, the 80s were pretty good, let's face it.
No, I mean your 20 to 30, 30. Oh, well, I suppose that defines you, doesn't it, actually?
Yeah, the 80s were my
20s. Child of 1960.
Because I was born in 1960.
Yeah, of course.
So,
I'll catch up with the sums in a minute.
Yeah, I mean,
clearly maths is not one of my strengths.
I wouldn't say, I haven't turned 80 yet. I wouldn't say there'd been a really bad decade, but the 80s, in the early days of being chief footy writer, my old sports editor, Steve Linnell, used to say, oh, you're just from that 80s crowd. You're so 80s. And he was almost disdainful. And there was a group of us who he said, and the people you're friends with, you know, you're just so 80s. But I loved the 80s because they started out, you know, first job, moving into writing in the sports department, living overseas, and then it ended up with probably getting married. So it was very much a bookended decade. I must say I'm enjoying, you know, well, I wouldn't say I'm enjoying the 20s because it's only been, you know, a few months.
It's been a terrible start to the 20s.
It's been a terrible start, but as my youngest daughter said to me the other day, Mum, when you look at how bad this period has been for a lot of people, I know it's a cliche, we have been so lucky. Mm. The 90s were when I was in my 30s, Corrie, were when I had children. Started out literally. I mean,
happy birthday to Rose.
To Rose,
who turns
30 this week, and she was born two days after my 30th birthday. And then I had Clem at the age of 35. So that was a really busy, and you know, money was tight, and you're working really hard, and you don't really. And we lived in a beautiful. We bought a big old house, but it was very old. And then by the end of the decade, we'd fixed it up. So look. It's so funny. You actually look back at those sort of things, and I look back at my 40s and go, the 40s are a great era for anyone.
They are, but you're very busy, aren't you?
You're busy, but you're probably
busy if you're working too.
You're still looking pretty good, but you're starting to be more established in your career. Mm. Your children are at school, and you know, depending on what age you have children, but that was for me. And you know, I love the school years. I love particularly the senior school years. You know, I just really enjoyed the friends I made over that period, you know, the music.
But we were so busy, though,
the rowing,
we?
The athletics,
when I
the
look
football.
Back, when I look back to the decades of being 40, 40 to 50, I just feel I was in the car the whole time, racing to work, dropping kids off from school, dropping them off at football or rowing or, you know, someone's gathering and you'd sit outside at 10 minutes past 10, and you'd said to them, you've got to be out the front at 10, and you're thinking, do I go inside, do I not? You know, that whole... That whole worry, that stress, will they take drugs, will they be safe?
I know, I was late for the odd school pickup. I still feel bad about that. But look, honestly, I feel as though I've made most posts a winner, and I'm feeling incredibly fortunate. But
I'm glad you are.
Yeah, so I must say the 1980s were... And I love the fashion too, and I love the music. I've really rocked a lace shirt. I really did. Oh,
thank God you didn't say the pirate look. If you'd said that, I would have vomited. So our generation, probably the older baby boomers, are really redefining 60. I must say, I can remember my grandmother having her 65th birthday, and she looked nothing like we look like. I don't mean to laugh, but it was a really different attitude to growing old, wasn't it?
Yes. No, that's true. Well, the other thing is, I think, and this is not a fish for compliments, but it made me think of it on Footy Classified on Monday night. So Matthew Lloyd presented me with these beautiful flowers at the end of the show, and Hutchie said, don't do a Tony Jones Beck jar, like don't lean over and try and kiss Carol when she pushes you away, which is what happened famously on the news with Tony Jones. And I said, well, that's not going to happen because it's COVID. And then I was about to say, and you know, Matthew's clearly not Tony Jones, and I'm so not Beck jarred. And I thought, as you get older, if you're not someone who, it must be hard when you're absolutely beautiful. You know, when you're one of those people who walk into a room and you know, everybody, I mean, I always wanted, you always wanted, secretly want to be that person. But when you're not, I mean, you're happy with the way you look, but you're not, that's not what defines you. It's sort of not such a big deal getting older too. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. I think because you're not defining yourself from beauty, because beauty, well, it's, as we know, it's inside, it's not outside.
Yeah.
But if you are somebody who counts the wrinkles and is very concerned about the menopausal tummy, as I call it, and all of those sorts of things, I think growing old would be
menopausal
difficult.
Tummy?
Oh, you know, the thickening of the waist, the muffin top.
Oh, okay.
Jane, you don't have it. Don't be ridiculous. Look, Jane's pretending.
Jane's doing Marcel Marceau over there.
Jane's sign pretending language. To join our group. Come on, young people over here, you know. Stage right, please.
Oh, very
I'd just like to say a quick hello and also happy 60th to a couple of our listeners. One to Sharon, my dear friend Sharon. Shaz, the fellow Hawthorn supporter, born the same day as you, Caro.
Really?
There you go.
Really? Oh, and my friend Damien Silk, big Tiger fan. He was also born the same day
and
as me.
And also my dear friend, very dear friend, Peter, husband of Penny. Penny is, and I think her daughters actually, they're all keen Don't Shoot the Messenger listeners, but Peter has been a friend for a very long time and I'd like to wish him a happy birthday today, actually. Caro, you're in pretty good company with people who are turning 60 this year. Nigella Lawson.
Really?
I often think you look like her when you're licking your fingers at midnight
wishes.
With the
my
refrigerator door open and you're in your little satin pyjamas. Julianne Moore, the actress. Colin Firth. He looks pretty good for 60.
He does.
Hugh Grant doesn't look so good for 60.
Oh.
Oh, September 9 is his birthday. Your dear friend Bono, who you mentioned the other day. Yannick Noah, the tennis player. I did not realise that. Antonio Banderas, who I watched the other night as Puss in Boots.
Is he 60?
In Shrek 2.
Oh, is he 60?
He is 60. Michael Hutchence, if he was alive, would be 60.
Would he?
The new Instagram pin-up since COVID, Stanley Tucci, is turning 60.
Is that all? I always think of him as older than me, isn't that? That's funny. You often think of people as being older than you and then you realise you're actually as old as them.
Well, this one will just make you feel a bit unwell. Prince Andrew, 60.
Oh, yeah, he's in a bit of strife, isn't he?
He looks about 75. Kenneth Branagh, Mel Meninga.
Is he 60?
And Jennifer Grey, remember her as the sister on Ferris Bueller's Day Off and also Dirty Dancing?
Dirty
you
Dancing,
couldn't get
yep.
two different, more different roles. But the Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that scene in the cop station with Charlie Sheen is just my all-time great scene.
Oh, it's a great film.
Hugo Weaving is 60. And Kristen Scott Thomas, who's also a big pin-up of yours online.
Oh, she looks really good for 60.
I don't want to make you unwell, but soon to turn 61, Mike Pence. Now, honestly, Mike Pence, the vice president of the US, he looks about... Like, he doesn't look our age.
No.
And he doesn't have our attitude. Well, that's okay, a different political sphere, but...
No.
He doesn't look... He looks a lot older. Do we look that old? Oh. When I read that last night, I nearly fainted.
Oh, well, look, my quick cheery. I was bookended by two very, very old family friends. Well, three, really. We all turned 60 within 3 days of each other. Michael Ramsden.
Happy birthday,
Tony
Michael.
Tony Blakely and Virginia Dahlenberg.
Oh, Virginia
to
and Tony.
To my favourite childhood bookends, happy birthday to you all.
Okay, so let's move on to something a little more serious than your 60th. Protest in the time of COVID. Did you know anybody who marched? Would you have marched on Saturday given the health issues before us or would you not?
Look, probably not because of the social distancing situation. I had a family member who was going to march and was determined to march, and then my mother spoke to them and asked them not to march because we were going to be having, as you just mentioned, a big family lunch for my 60th. And she said, if you march, then I won't be able to come to Caro's 60th, or you won't, because I've worked so hard to keep away from people and I'm in my 80s. And so they did the right thing. They immediately said, oh, look, of course, I didn't think of that. And they didn't march. And it doesn't mean that I think if I was in my 20s, I probably would have marched, Corrie, to be honest, to be brutally honest. It's been such a, you know, the cause and the reason for the march was so important. And I think it all went pretty well, and certainly in Melbourne, didn't it? 10,000 people?
It did. And it was no mostly Barneys. Peaceful. There were a couple of arrests. There were a couple of injured people. But apart from that, so of course the protest marches, which involved thousands of people around Australia, were in response to last week's killing of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis. And that event, of course, has triggered this massive global response about racism. And, of course, here in Australia, it prompted many Australians to consider our country's own blemished record. And that record includes, of course, 441 Aboriginal deaths in custody since 1991. There was no special distancing enforced by police, I understand. New South Wales government had lodged, they wanted some sort of quick legislation to stop people protesting, but the court, within hours of the march on Saturday, said no, they are allowed to march. I think it's been really interesting, Caro, because so many people, young and old, are really identifying with this. I don't know. Well, you wouldn't have seen Q&A the other night because, of course, you're on the other network. But Q&A was really interesting. They looked at this particular issue. Latona Dungay, whose son David Dungay Jr. was killed in custody in Long Bay Jail in 2015, she spoke. There wasn't a dry eye in anybody's home, I don't think, as we heard from her. All she wants is justice. People have come up with lots of different solutions. Where do we go from here? A review of policing, training of police, law enforcement legislation, and also a number of getting the numbers up of Indigenous people in government. So not just federal government, but local government, state government. That's what we really need. And so they can self-determine. So those elders, so those representatives can actually have a say and determine how this should be resolved. Marcia Langton, you know, one of our great heroes and a good friend of the bookshop, I must say, Professor Langton was recognised in the Queen's Birthday Honours, and she used this moment, Caro, I don't know whether you saw it on Monday night, she was on the news everywhere talking, using that award and that moment to actually really highlight what's happening here. And she said, I believe we're all one species and we all have the same potentials. And she said, I would have thought it's all pretty straightforward. Do not kill Aborigines.
Yeah, look, it's a multi-layered, clearly, and dreadful, and such an important. It's the issue really at the moment, isn't it, going forward? But I think the thing that it's almost disturbed me more than anything else is the fact that a policeman killed not just a black person, but just killed someone he was arresting. I mean, that's what's really terrifying. The law enforcement. Agents and law enforcers are people we need to trust. They're the and we do expect more from them. That was like such a breakdown of trust. I can't tell you how horrified I was by that particular element of it. And obviously the Black Lives Matter issue that has resonated around the world, not just in America. But, I always have a go at you for spending too much time on Donald Trump because he's such a... It's just such a waste of space and such a nightmare of a leader. I almost just don't even think we need to talk about him. But honestly, the way he's behaved over this has just been so disgusting. And then we bring it back to Australia and even in the AFL where Hawthorn's Chad Wingard has said, look, I'm just so horrified by the reporting of this. And I wouldn't say all the reporting has been like that, but certainly early on, you know, the disgust and the venom, the vehement sort of dislike and disapproval of what the protesters were doing has meant that he placed a media ban on himself. And immediately...
I respect that.
Well, immediately there was a bit of an Adam Goods backlash.
Isn't that interesting?
And it wasn't as bad as Adam Goods, but it was like, oh, who does he think he is? I mean, you know, get over yourself, Chad, and that sort of response. And Kane Corns, who used to play with Chad, because they were both Port Adelaide footballers for a time, on Footy Classified sort of talked about the fact that players need to be cooperative with the media at the moment because the AFL is desperately trying to get money for clubs and the industry's in crisis, et cetera. And I understood the point he was making, but it was such a small point compared to Chad's bigger point. And, you know, so few Indigenous Australians in football are prepared to speak up now because of what happened, really, because of what happened to Adam Goods. Like, why would you put your head up when that sort of, when your life can almost be at the point of being ruined? So I really admired what he did.
I really did. I agree. Speaking of footy, Caro, and it's back on the agenda this week, in a super quick dot point form, what would you say are the three biggest issues of this week or the three big challenges? Well, the three big stories.
Attendances. The fact that, you know, in Queensland, it looks like the Premier will allow, the chief medical people are going to allow 25% capacity at sporting venues in Queensland, which will mean that at the Gabba and Metricon Stadium, and obviously Suncorp for the NRL, that if they wanted to, at the Gabba this weekend, you could have 10,000 people. They're going to introduce it slowly, incrementally, and start with 1,000. But that is huge. And I reckon here in Victoria, and New South Wales are hoping to get corporates in this weekend. Adelaide, ditto for the showdown.
But you're hoping to get me in for the Hawks-Richmond clash?
Yeah, I think that's a bit optimistic.
In the boot of your car.
I'll be glad to. The MCG will be happy to welcome you back, Corrie, the most worst attendee that they've had in many years.
Once last year. Actually, I don't even know whether I did once. Did I? Go on.
Anyway, I'm not sure you did.
Yeah, so what's the next thing?
That's a big issue, and I think there will be crowds back at the MCG in very small numbers, maybe in a month. Second one is the TV rights deal. There's still no broadcast deal. They haven't agreed on a figure for this year, which will obviously be reduced, Foxtel, Channel 7 and Telstra. I'm still confident that deal will get done. And as a segue to that, will it be an anti-climax and have people left the game and got used to it not being in their lives? Mm. That is, to me, the biggest issue. I mentioned the anti-climax last week. Round one, a lot of people tuned into Richmond-Carlton. By the next night, the numbers had dropped dramatically for the Friday night game, which involved Collingwood. So, you know, it's just going to be really interesting how that goes. So job losses are obviously a big issue, but this week there are the issues.
Oh, good. All right. Well,
the hubs are pretty interesting too. They had a fire in the first hub had a fire yesterday morning at the Royal Pines.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh. But I heard that. I just thought, it's like sending all of these 14-year-old boys away on.
I heard that, you know, how some three West Coast players are bringing their families because they're allowed to. Apparently one player of one of the hub teams wanted to bring their parents. I'm sorry to laugh. Maybe they were feeling a bit insecure, but anyway, I don't think their parents are coming.
I might let that just settle. Crush of the week for Red Energy. Hi, Red Energy. Our wonderful supporters, and they have been fantastic with our podcast, just gathering up into their bosom, Caro, the Red Energy gang have, and they apparently love our show, which is even nicer.
Call 131-806 for real Aussie energy. Since you're carrying the show, Corrie, I better introduce your crush.
My crush. So we're just still a bit on the topic of George Floyd. My crush, Caro, is Darnella Frazier, the 17-year-old who took the video of George Floyd being suffocated and killed by police on Monday. She then posted it as proof of police brutality, and immediately it, of course, went viral. She stood there for the whole 9 minutes and filmed it, and the police did not make a move to move her off, which is interesting in itself that they didn't sort of feel
no.
They were doing anything terribly wrong. According to her Facebook page, Darnella has been receiving numerous questions about why she didn't fight off police for the duration of the video and in fact do something to save Floyd. Her response was she was terrified as a 17-year-old to take on the cops and help Floyd, and she felt that whatever she was doing was important and she did not expect him to be dead at the end of it. So we all might have different views on that. As journalists, that's always that extraordinary moment, isn't it, of being the participant or the independent observer, and how many war correspondents and people who have covered civil unrest over the years, we've seen the journalists trying to do their story. Do you get involved? Do you not? Difficult. But I think Michael Moore, the Hollywood documentary maker, said this best on his podcast Rumble, and he said he commended Darnella Frazier. He actually said maybe she should be up for an Academy Award in the non-fiction section next year. But this video had been watched by probably more people ever before. And she said to all of the other people who are in this situation like Darnella, be a witness to injustice and show it to billions around the world. And he said, thank you, Darnella. And I think that she's actually handled it really well. Her responses have been very thoughtful. I hope she's not vilified for this. And she's my hero. She's my crush.
Very appropriate crush. You're also going to, you seem to be.
I know, I've dominated the show today.
No, because, well, thank you.
Am I carrying you? Am I Eddie? Craig? No, who carried you? Craig. Carried you.
Oh, dear. That's really.
Things I have in common with Craig Hutchinson.
Now, Corrie, it is time for BSF. And I do have a screen, but you're going to kick off with a book.
Yeah. So it's called The Motion of the Body Through Space by Lionel Shriver Caro. Lionel is one of our favourite American authors. Leapt into our hemisphere about 20 years ago with We Need to Talk About Kevin. And, of course, you and I loved The Post-Birthday World. And I think you are currently reading The Mandibles and you're going to review that soon.
Yes.
Would that be right?
Well, our dear friend Deb Conway said it is the most appropriate book in the time of COVID.
Yes,
I'll come back to you on that.
The Motion of the Body Through Space is Shriver's 15th novel, and she tackles the matter of the fitness industry, its impact on our lives, on our bank accounts, and in the case of American middle-class couple Remington and Serenata, the impact it has on their marriage. Turning 60, it's actually quite poignant at the moment that we're talking about you turning 60, because this couple are in their early 60s and Serenata for years and years has been a fitness fanatic. She's always run around the block and everything, but cruel timing, a violation of her territory. She's had to give up running because her knees are shot. And at the same time, Remington decides that he is going to start running. So she's sitting in the armchair with her bad knees, feeling rather agitated, whereas Remington is off doing marathons and triathlons and spending quite a bit of time with his new personal trainer, Bambi.
Oh.
I'm not going to say any more. But this is Lionel Shriver at her most kind of agitated best. She really gets under the skin of all of us who don't want to age, who think that by doing a bit of fitness we are heroes, who spend way too much money on Lycra.
Interesting.
It is a really good book for our time. So that is my tip. What's your screen?
Well, this is a Netflix series. Netflix, Corrie, not Stan, not SBS On Demand, not Amazon, not Prime. Oh, that's Prime, same thing. My sister has been telling me to watch this for about 2 or 3 months. So I've just started. I can't go into huge detail about whether I think it's good or not. She claims the whole thing is brilliant. It's a 6-part series, appropriate for the footy fan. It's called The English Game.
Oh, sounds great.
It's an historic drama, and it's basically about the origins of football.
Soccer.
Except we call it soccer, but, yeah, football. And it's basically it's set in the 1800s, moving to the late 18 to the sort of the 1880s, and it's but the premise is that football and sport was basically a gentleman's game. It was for the upper classes, and this is about how the working classes started to play football, leading to the first FA Cup. So it is a great, for people who love sport, for people who love historic drama, you'll recognise all the faces, but there aren't any huge names in it. You'll recognise all of them from things that you and I have loved for many years on the BBC. It's a 6-part series, as I said. It is just perfect.
Sounds great.
According to my sister, and she's usually a pretty good judge.
And how good is Belgravia, just quietly?
Yes.
Don't forget, everybody. Keep watching.
The third one
BBC
was
first.
The third one as good as the first.
Oh, no, let's keep going. So anyway, we won't give anything away. And just quickly, back to the pictures soon, into the theatre. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to seeing?
Well, I am actually looking forward to The Secret Garden. I'm sorry. Colin Firth. I think, did I see
Fellow sextagenarian?
Yeah, I think it's got it's got a few other famous names in it. But anyway, I think it looks absolutely brilliant. It's one of my favourite books. I love the original film. So, yeah, I'll be looking forward to that. But you're going to buy tickets for me to something, aren't you?
I am, yes, with Steve Carell. I can't remember the name of it, but I thought we might have a celebration, you know,
or anything.
Bust out.
Very little that he does that isn't sort of absolutely brilliant.
Now, Caro, really. On to food. And this is something that I actually served to you not that long ago. It is from the old Alimentari cookbook, which is, Alimentari, the wonderful delicatessen and cafe in Collingwood or Fitzroy, I forget, just at the moment. This is called Farro Persian Feta and Almond Salad. And I'm not going to go through how you put it together, but Kel Island, this is an easy one to do.
Oh, Kel. I've got a really simple one for Kel next week too. But
all you
go
do
ahead.
Is you put 500 grams of pilled farro into a saucepan and boil it and simmer it, and do serve it al dente, Kel. Don't overdo it. And then you put ghee, which I think is just one of the great unsung heroes of cooking, at 1.5 tablespoons of ghee into a pan.
Clementine's brought ghee back into my life.
And you get a packet of slivered almonds and cook them up till they're nice and toasty and beautiful. And then you drain them on a paper towel. And then in a small bowl, you combine a bit of olive oil, and you've already made your fresh pesto. Again, Alimentari has the best pesto recipe ever. And I've done that before on the podcast, but we will repeat it again. And then to assemble the salad, you fold the farro, some Persian feta, and herbs and almonds together with the pesto in a large bowl. So it's all a beautiful greeny colour. What I did the other day, which I usually do, is I add heaps of rocket cut up really finely, because it just the green pops a bit more. So the pesto is bright green and fantastic, but it does tend to blend in a bit. But the fresh herbs and
the rocket.
Is
there basil as well in the pesto?
Yes, there is basil and parsley in the pesto. It's a great pesto recipe.
Jeff Slattery says it's not pesto if it doesn't have just basil.
I know. Well, it's definitely, this is one of the great pesto recipes. I'll have that as well. But farro, Persian feta, and almond salad. And for people who like a grain salad, this one is absolutely yum.
I actually can say it has been one of your triumphs, one of your true triumphs.
Thanks
very
much.
A really good recipe. It's Julie Walters is in The Secret Garden. I couldn't remember her
name. Oh, as the housekeeper.
Yeah.
Dickens' mother.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, absolutely love that. That was BSF for Red Energy, powered by Snowy Hydro, a leader in renewable energy. And as we said, Corrie, you can call 131 806 for Real Aussie Energy. The Melbourne-based team will help you out. Tell them Carrie and Corrie.
Who?
You know, again, our friend Tanya called me Corrie the other day. It's so funny.
As she takes another swig of her Negroni.
Caro and Corrie sent
you. You don't even know who you are.
What are you grumpy about today, Corrie?
Can I just
Corrie
say,
Ander?
I just know that you're going to, you know, say that I'm carrying the show here, but can I just, I'm not going to read out the little bleating text from you yesterday, but it was basically like, oh, my head is addled. And I said, any suggestions, anything you want to talk about, you came up with a screen. So I just want everyone to know.
I did have a couple of other ideas.
This is my birthday gift to Caro. I'm non-stop talking. This is the Corrie Perkins Show with Jane Neild.
Excuse me, Corrie. Excuse me.
And our special guest, Jane, Caroline Wilson.
What about the, I said we should talk about the protest.
I said
we should talk about the return of footy. I had lots of amazing ideas. Amazing ideas. I said we should go back on our monthly challenges.
Relevance deprivation, Jane. It's just sad when you get to 60.
Bloody lucky I text you.
Now,
seriously, I was feeling so addled.
Oh, Corrie is grumpy. Yes, I am. Caro, Big Brother is back. I know how you love a reality television
right
show.
Back at your girlfriend.
Oh, God. Really?
Seriously, you know they ban books on that show. I mean, any show that bans books. I had this argument with Clementine the other morning.
What channel is it on? 7 now. Channel 7, it was bad 20 years ago when it was on Channel 10. It's bad now. It's bad. It's just shocking.
And it doesn't even have Gretel Colleen, does it?
No, I mean, it has Sonia Kruger. Oh, really, Sonia?
Well, I don't mind Sonia, but Gretel carried that show, didn't she?
I'm not saying another word, but, you know, it doesn't have a deserted island. There's no racing around the country. There's no cooking up a storm. There's nothing that makes reality television even worth
it. I loathe reality television, as you know.
But I do love MasterChef, although I haven't watched the current series. I didn't mind in the early days Survivor when Fat Rich won all the money. But he was thin rich by the end of the 3 weeks on the island. He was very fat when he started. But honestly, I just please stop me, Caro. I can't even talk about Big Brother. So that's what I'm grumpy about. So grumpy. It is totally scary. Now, I have a question for you. And my question is, Channel 7 last week axed 2 of its footy shows, The Game Day, which is on Sunday morning, and Monday night's Talking Footy with Tim Watson. What's going on, and what effect will this have on Channel 7's footy coverage?
Well, it is interesting. And you sort of Should the host broadcaster, the AFL's broadcast partner, actually have football shows? Is it incumbent upon them? I think that it would be better if they did. The Monday night show was on the second channel and never really, unlike sort of On the Couch, it's the show that was originally talking footy on Channel 7 many, many years ago that Mike Sheehan started off in and Bruce McAvaney, it never really sort of had a point to it. So I'm not surprised that the Monday night show's gone, but I am surprised about Game Day. The thing about Game Day hosted by Hamish McLachlan was it always had a lot of great guests and great vision because, you know, Channel 7 had all the vision and was assigned a lot of guests were commentators signed to the network. They have a revolving panel, a bit like The Insiders, although a completely different show, and Offsiders. But I think with The Offsiders it works differently. I think they need a set panel. And there is a view among the AFL that Game Day could come back in some form later in the year. The show they really need, that they overthought, was the pre-game on Saturday night. It's been called The Kick. They tried to steal before the game by getting, you know, Sam Lane and a few other cast members, Mick Malloy, etc. Never really, they never knew quite what to do with it. So I think now they should just spend that pre-game, that Saturday night show, produce, they always had different producers to the actual footy. Just make it a pre-game footy coverage. That's what we want to hear about. Bit of what happened today and a bit of what's happening tonight. And talk, get the coaches in. I mean, all the coaches will have to step up now. Everyone's going to have to step up to help the network and help the coverage. So it is pretty disappointing.
It's not that difficult, is it?
But, you know, The Front Bar, which has been a really successful show, is back, and that's great. It'll be interesting to see how that goes without a live audience, but I back those guys on that show to make it work. Now, Corrie, what's your feeling about the Queen's Birthday Honours?
I have no feelings whatsoever. Over the years, Caro, and it's probably a sign of getting old as well, I know more and more Australians who are receiving Queen's Birthday Honours, and good on them. I love them. I think they're brilliant and they deserve some acknowledgement. What I can't abide are politicians who receive a Queen's Birthday honour just because they did their job of being a politician, just because they're in the role of advocates for their community, which you would hope most members of Parliament are. Why should they be rewarded with a Queen's Birthday honour? Now, if they've done something particular...
And all of
really
them.
Really particular.
You're talking about Tony Abbott.
Oh, I mean, and Dennis Napthine.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, they sort of singled out certain areas where they had done good community work. So
I think of all the unsung heroes who have done way more community work than that.
Well,
there are
a lot of unsung heroes in those honours, whether you believe in them or not. And I want to send a cheerio to our friend Mandy Millage, who is a really, really worthy recipient who received a Queen's Birthday honour. So that's just one that I could single out
well
from
done, Mandy.
This year's batch.
Now, which AFL coach has been a standout during lockdown?
Well, Alistair Clarkson's certainly been on a lot of committees.
Clarkson. And he's funny and witty and on Instagram and all sorts of things.
Not so much. But yeah, you.
Jane, she just doesn't give Hawthorn. Not one inch. Not one.
Damien Hardwick did a better TikTok. You know, I've been really impressed with Nathan Buckley. I reckon he's spoken with great reason, with great empathy, with great pathos. I know behind the scenes he did a lot of arm twisting when that first pay cut was mooted and not everybody came on board straight away, but obviously they've all taken big pay cuts now. I'd also single out Chris Fagan, who's done a lot of media and has been in, you know, he's had to keep a lot of players together because not all of them, a lot of Brisbane players went to their home states and left, and he's had to keep them all together, particularly the more high maintenance ones. I think he's been incredibly impressive, and he's tried to get jobs outside of footy for all of his assistants, those who did lose their jobs before we knew about JobKeeper, etc. And probably another one who I think is, well, just because he's been very honest and plain speaking and again, been pretty funny on the old TikTok, has been John Longmire. So there'd be three I'd single out.
Oh, and Clarko.
Yeah. What great act of kindness in the time of corona made you cry this week, Corrie?
Last week, I wrote in our newsletter that goes out to 5,500 my bookshop friends, I wrote about a thank you to them all for supporting us during corona and buying books. And I wasn't in the shop at the end of last week, but my colleague Deb called me up and said, the most extraordinary thing has happened. A customer, we don't know her name, a customer came in with an envelope and said, I would like to give this to the bookshop. And Deb thought it was a card of some sort. The customer also said, you know, thank you so much for your service during lockdown and the books and da-da-da, all that sort of stuff. And so Deb rang me and said that we talked about the end of day and what had happened. And she said, oh, by the way, this customer came in. I think it's a card. I said, oh, open it. What does it say? And inside was some money with a note putting this toward the bookshop as a thank you for all you have done. I know times are tough and I know you guys have probably taken a big hit with business. Oh, I just wanted to show my appreciation. So oh. I don't know who you are, if you are a potty, but thank you from the bottom of my heart. We often joke sometimes at the bookshop about doing crowdfunding, especially when we've got a bit of rent to pay. But it was just the most wonderful, wonderful gift. So that made me cry. That now, is, Caro, so you are lovely. 60. Are you activating your seniors card?
Well, look, I haven't actually thought about this, but I'm told I can go to movies cheaper. And dear Richard, my brother-in-law's brother, did send me the link on my birthday, as someone always does. So I got a very nice letter from the bank saying they're no longer going to be charging us fees.
What?
Because I've turned 60. And that was even before, that was last week before I turned 60. Yeah, they're not charging. And I was actually, you know, being
me. Are
you
sure?
Absolutely. I wasn't aware of how outrageous fees they were charging me. And I have been with them for a long time. So, yeah, so that was nice. Thank you, ANZ Bank. And, yeah, I probably will, Corrie, but a bit of paperwork I can put off for a few weeks. Corrie, what was your funniest Instagram moment this week?
Sam Neill, the prop, which I've told you about before Instagram, which features Sam Neill, the actor. He has been in fine form during coronavirus lockdown and he has been bringing in some acting friends to assist him. The episode a few weeks ago with Hugo Vickers in the bathtub was hilarious. So, and of course, they shoot it in different houses because they're not all together. But the backdrops, the actors do work hard to try and make sure the backdrops work. They look a bit the same. It's brilliant. Anyway, this week, Helena Bonham Carter, Caro, pops up and she's playing the role of Sam's iPhone, the one he forgot to take with him shopping. And when he arrives home, so the Instagram feed starts with Sam coming in with his shopping, whistling into the kitchen, puts it down and, you know, and he looks around and there's Helena Bonham Carter holding the iPhone. And she says, I'm smart and I'm beautiful. What do I do for you? List it. And Sam goes, music, movies, Candy Crush, Grand Theft Auto. I'm actually top level. And you're even a telephone. And she goes, exactly. And then she says, 10 minutes. I was here, Sam. 10 minutes. What do you say, Sam, when you leave the house? And he goes, keys, wallet, phone. Louder, she says. Keys, wallet, phone. Yes, and what did you forget? Sam says, I forgot you. Oh, it's brilliant, Caro. It's so funny.
Oh, I'm going to have to watch this.
It's really, really funny.
I'm going to have
it'll
to watch
it'll cheer
this.
You up and it'll make you feel younger. That's the end of our show. Isn't that sad?
Well, thank you, Corrie.
Next week you'll be into your 61st year.
You've been a great host.
Would you like to do the sign off because you haven't done very much today?
Well, I do it quite a lot, but I will, Corrie. Thank you, Red Energy. That's the end of the show. Call 131806 for Real Aussie Energy. Thank you to all of our supporters. Thanks for your feedback, comments. Please send us more. Please send us your tips and suggestions to the Don't Shoot the Messenger Facebook page.
Do take a look at the Don't Shoot Pod Instagram account because there are lots of happy birthdays from our poddies to you.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. I will. I'll have a look at it today. You can also email us feedback@don'tshootpod.com.au. Thank you, Miss Jane. Don't forget our footy tips episode drops on Thursday morning before the footy kicks off. And we've got a GLT Corona episode coming up. It'll probably drop around Saturday, which is some of us will be right in the thick of the footy. Corrie, what do we say?
Don't shoot the messenger, especially if she's 60.
Thanks for listening to the Don't Shoot the Messenger podcast with Caroline Wilson and Corrie Perkin. Thanks to Red Energy. Powered by Snowy Hydro, a leader in renewable energy, call 131 806 for Real Aussie Energy.